first New Testament reading this morning is from Romans 3, verses 21 to 23. But now, irrespective of law, the righteousness of God has been disclosed and is attested by the law and the prophets. The righteousness of God through faith in Jesus Christ for all who believe. For there is no distinction, since all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And the second reading is from James 2, verses 14 through 17. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith, but do not have works? Can faith save you? If a brother or sister is naked and lacks daily food, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill, and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that? So faith, by itself, if it has no works, is dead. Most everyone has faith in something. Some have faith in science or logic. Some have faith in the media and its role in a democracy. Some have faith in technology, its ability to solve problems and interconnect us. Some have faith in money, that it can buy security or power or love. Others have faith in nature and its regenerative properties after a natural disaster, or that the rain will eventually start or stop. Some have faith in government, though that's a tougher road nowadays, perhaps, than it used to be. Sometimes we have faith in other people, but life is harder when they disappoint us in some way. But when most of us churchgoers think about faith, we think about it in the context of religion. When I was in my 20s, I was in a Bible study where we'd discuss for whole evenings at a time whether faith was owed to a person because of good deeds done, or was instead a gift bestowed by God on someone who God trusted or had a close relationship with. We pray to God to give us faith because in part we believe that having faith will help us through tough times, shield us from pain or suffering. The tendency to equate faith with doctrine and then argue about terminology and concepts distracts us from what faith is actually about. Its essence lies in trusting ourselves to discover the deepest truths that we can rely on, whether they're connected to God or not. Faith is not belief without proof, or belief despite the evidence. It's a complete trust or confidence in someone or something. That trust or confidence we have is built up over time as the object of our faith proves faithful time and time again. At a crisis point in my life, a counselor said to me, people of faith have faith in themselves. I never thought of that before. I wasn't sure I wanted to hear it. If I placed all my faith in God, then I could blame her when things didn't go the way I wanted. Over the last 20 years, I've learned a lot about having faith in myself. A book called Faith by Susan Salzberg has added more. This morning, I want to talk about this different use of the word faith. This is a faith that emphasizes a foundation of love and respect for ourselves. It's a faith that's willing to take the next step forward. It's a faith that uncovers our connection to others. And it's a faith that's aware of the bigger picture. It's not necessarily connected to God, though it can be and certainly is in my case. Faith is an inner quality that unfolds as we learn to trust our own deepest experience. In my first marriage, I lost all faith in myself. To keep the peace, I shut down my opinions, my ideas, and most of my feelings. At first, it wasn't safe to have them. Later, it wasn't worth the effort. When I discovered that my husband was having an affair, I gave myself permission to get out. I was terrified of living life on my own after 18 years of marriage and of single parenting. How would I manage? How would I learn to trust again, to love again? And this is when my counselor said, "People of faith have faith in themselves." In Latin and Hebrew, the word faith is a verb, an action. It's not something we either have or don't have. It's something we do. It's the willingness to take the next step, to see the unknown as an adventure, to launch a journey. It opens us to the possibility that our lives can be different, and my life needed to be different. So first, I kept going to counseling. When the counselors asked, "How do you feel about such and such?" I'd say, "I don't know, because I didn't." After my allotted hour, I wanted to camp outside his door until it was time to come again the next week. I was that afraid. I cried a lot. I gnashed my teeth. Then I increased my part-time work hours to ease finances. I listened to talk radio on my way home from work and began to have reactions and form opinions about the controversial ideas presented. My folks bought new furniture and gave me the old pieces, which were still in perfectly good shape. I spent time with friends. In our apartment, my daughter and I were only allowed to have caged animals. We got a pet rat and two hermit crabs. I began to heal. I began to have answers to the question, "How do you feel?" at the counselor's office. And sometimes the answer was joyful. The foundation of faith is to recognize that everything is moving onward to something else, inside us and outside us. And things moved in my life such that one day I began to think about dating again, a whole nother level of scary. I didn't trust men. I didn't have faith in my own ability to judge character in someone. But I knew I wanted to develop that faith. Online dating hadn't been invented yet. The popular way of meeting someone then was to put a tiny ad in the newspaper. So I did. I got to decide who to call back and arrange to meet. I learned to determine who to date a second time. I spoke up when a guy behaved like a jerk and took great delight in never seeing him again. I started believing in the possibility that I might meet someone who would love and respect me as I had now learned to do. It is this glimmer of possibility that's the beginning of faith, that no matter how miserable we are in the present moment, we can go on, take the next step forward, instead of becoming lost in resignation or despair. The second thing that's at the foundation of my faith is connection. Where others might see random happenings, I see synchronicities and layers of connection. Even in my darkest moments, I know that I'm not alone. Friends and family are there, sometimes total strangers. God is always there, and loved ones who have died. I want to tell you a story about Barb Harlan, a beloved member of this church who many of you knew, who died a couple of years ago. She and I had been friends for 35 years. When she found out that her cancer had returned, she had a long weekend to get through before additional doctor visits and tests started up the next Monday. I scanned the newspaper looking for something we could do together to get her out of the house and distract her for a time, something that didn't take up too much energy because she was already so tired and somewhat unsteady on her feet. I spotted a quilt show in a little church in Amboy. Perfect. A nice drive in the country, a chance to chat there and back, a small town which she always had a soft spot in her heart for, a picturesque little church that required very little walking. We reminisced happily in the car on the way. The weather warmed and dried. We spotted a few early spring flowers. We admired the many lovely, impressive quilts at the show. The women of a small church in Battleground were raffling off a gorgeous quilt on display. Without hesitating, Barb bought 10 tickets. The drawing wasn't scheduled until December, and this was only March. With my heart in my throat, I thought, I wonder if she'll be alive by then. To keep her company while she laboriously wrote her name and phone number on each ticket, my husband bought me a couple tickets as well, and she and I filled them out together. Sadly, within 3 weeks, she was gone. My raffle tickets went into my upcoming events folder, and every time I saw them, I had the strongest feeling that Barb was going to win that quilt. I just knew it. I used to daydream about which one of her 3 adult children would want it the most. 9 months later, on December 15th, Jeff and I came home from church to find the phone ringing. "Hi," a voice said. "I'm calling from St. John of the Cross Church in Battleground to tell you that you won the quilt we were raffling off." I burst into tears. Barb gave the quilt to me. I arranged to pick up the quilt the next day and told the deliverer the story I've just told you. With tears in her eyes, she said, "I'm going right home and email every woman who worked on this quilt and tell them the story." I could feel Barb smiling. She loved connections. The quilt graces our bed. Barb covers me at night. I live in a world of synchronicities and layers of connection. It's part of my growing faith. When our intention is to do good for others and we nurture that intention, we can have faith that in some way, often unknown to us, it ripples out. Our actions are linked to a vast web of interconnection. And lastly, my experiences in life have taught me to have faith in the awareness of the bigger picture. I want to show you a children's book called Zoom, and I know you won't be able to see it from there, so I'm going to describe what's in it. On the first page, there's an abstract image of something red and pointy. The next page shows a colorful rooster whose comb is the image from the first page. You say to yourself, "Oh, this is a book with no words in it about a rooster." You turn the page and see a picture of children looking through the window of a house at the rooster. Oh, you think it's not a book about a rooster. It's about some children who live on a farm. As you turn more pages, the children and the house diminish in size until they prove to be pieces in a toy village being arranged by a little girl. Oh, you say, it's about a child, and she is the central figure in this story. The other figures were just her toys. A page later, the girl playing with the houses turns out to be part of an illustration on the cover of a book being held by a boy. And so it goes. As you turn the pages, you come to conclusion after conclusion about what the book is really about. Okay, this is a story about a boy who's on an ocean liner holding a book with a cover picturing a child playing with a miniature village. But when the entire ocean liner turns out to be part of a billboard pasted on the side of a bus, your confidence in your interpretations collapse. The bus proves to be part of a scene on a TV screen being watched by a cowboy in the desert, which turns out to be the illustration on a postage stamp, which is on a postcard in the hands of a group of people standing on an island beach. The next page shows the island as seen by the pilot in a small plane. Several pages later, through swirls of clouds, you see the Earth, a jewel-like globe floating in infinite space, then simply a distant white dot. Open to an immensity of perspective, your vision includes every image in an expansive sweep of vision, but it's not limited by any one of them. It's God's view of the world. Susan Salzberg, in her book, writes, "There is a far bigger picture to life than what we are facing in any particular moment. When we see only the suffering before us and our own actions in response to it, it's no wonder we might conclude that what we do seems inadequate. We may think the final result of something we've done is visible on page 4 of the story, or page 7. But as we turn page after page, we step outside our own limited perspective and realize that there is more to come. Both the suffering and our efforts to address it are woven into an immense but hidden flow of interactions, a dynamic process of action and consequence that doesn't stop with us and our particular role. We don't know the ultimate unfolding of any story, certainly not enough to decide that what we do has no effect. When we stand before a chasm of futility, it's first of all faith in this larger perspective that enables us to go on." End quote. When we have a physical pain in our body, an ache in our heart, an unjust treatment to deal with, it may seem to be all that is, all that ever will be. But when we look closely, we see the small changes that are happening all the time in the texture, the intensity, and the contours of what we're dealing with. When we see the inevitability of change, our lives can become alive with prospect. What life was is not what it is now, and not what it might yet be. Such faith is not superficial or sentimental. It doesn't say everything will turn out all right. A lot of times things don't turn out like we want or fit our ideas of what should be. Faith entails the understanding that we don't know how things will unfold. Even so, faith allows us to claim the possibility that we ourselves might change in ways that will allow us to persevere and grow. Life doesn't have to close us down and lead us into despair. We can emerge from whatever we encounter, not broken and embittered, but with an ever-replenishing wellspring of faith. The essence of faith lies in trusting ourselves to discover the deepest truths we can rely on. I have come to rely on 3 deepest truths. I need to always take the next step forward. I have layers and layers of connection with the people and events that ripple through my life. And there's a bigger picture than I can see at any particular moment. Spend some time this week thinking about the deepest truths you rely on. People of faith have faith in themselves. Amen.